Welcome, everyone, and hello, I'm Pat.
Hi, I'm Jesse.
And you are diving into another deep dive with us.
Yeah, great to be here.
Today, we're tackling a topic that's often really subtle, sometimes almost invisible, but it carries these profound impacts. Childhood emotional neglect, or CEN.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a stack of fascinating sources,
mm-hmm.
you know, everything from clinical psychology articles and research papers to some really deeply personal stories shared online.
Yeah, those personal stories are powerful. Our mission today really is to uncover the hidden effects of CEN, understand how it subtly shapes us, and maybe explore some clear pathways to healing.
Exactly.
It's about recognizing what might have been missing in your past and how that, you know, continues to impact your adult life, maybe without you even fully realizing it.
Right. So let's unpack this. Let's dive into the material you've shared with us and explore these often unseen dynamics. You know, when I first hear neglect, my mind often jumps to something really obvious.
Yeah, physical stuff usually.
Right, like not having enough food or a safe home. But our sources suggest CEN is much more insidious. To really get it,
mm-hmm.
we need to understand its subtle nature first. What is it, really?
That's a really crucial distinction to make. So this Psychology Today article, it defines childhood emotional neglect as happening when parents fail to respond to your emotions enough as they raise you.
Enough, that's key.
Right. What's key here, like you said, is that it's less about what parents did to a child, you know, an act of harm, and much more about what they didn't do. It's a deficit, an absence. It's the emotional support, the validation, maybe the guidance that was just missing.
So it's not always active harm, but a passive omission.
Yeah.
And that passive nature, I imagine, that's what makes it so hard for people to even identify it in their own lives, because there's no clear smoking gun of it.
Exactly. You nailed it. The source points out this key difference between CEN and emotional invalidation. Emotional invalidation is active. It's when your feelings are directly put down or criticized, like being told you're too emotional or stop being such a baby.
You have correct messages.
Right. But pure emotional neglect, it's often passive. It's subtle. It's hard to recall specific moments. And it can leave you doubting your own experiences later on because there isn't that clear event to point to. You just feel sort of an emptiness, like something was missing.
That makes so much sense. If no one ever did anything explicitly bad, but things were just absent.
Yeah.
It's incredibly difficult to put your finger on, even for yourself. Yeah. Can you give us some examples of those subtle passive moments?
Yeah, sure. Think about families where conversations are always superficial.
Mm.
Deeper topics or feelings just get consistently sidestepped. Or families that, you know, go to great lengths to avoid any discomfort and conflict, just sweeping things under the rug.
Avoidance.
Total avoidance. Another common one is when a child expresses anger, maybe frustration, and instead of getting guidance on how to handle that feeling, the parents just express disappointment, which effectively just shuts the feeling down. Or maybe a kid dealing with bullies at school, but they just know instinctively that telling their parents wouldn't help, or that their parents wouldn't know how to react.
So the child learns.
Implicitly, yeah. They learn their feelings are either too much trouble, or maybe they just don't matter enough to be really seen and addressed.
Okay, this brings up a really important question. It came up in a lot of the personal stories you shared, especially from those Reddit threads.
Mm-hmm.
Can genuinely loving parents still be emotionally neglectful? Because for many, that feels like a huge contradiction.
It's a question that comes up all the time, and the answer, based on our sources, is a definite yes. That Reddit thread, can emotional neglectful parents also be loving parents? It shows this paradox really clearly.
Yeah.
So many people shared stories about parents who provided everything physically, food, shelter, hobbies, gifts, you name it, but were still emotionally absent or just didn't have the skills for emotional connection.
I remember one comment that really stuck with me. Someone said their parents never yelled at me or punished me, and they could always come to them when I needed things, but never for comfort.
Wow.
That just perfectly captures the invisible nature of it.
Yeah.
Like a vital nutrient was just missing from their emotional diet.
Exactly. And another Reddit user pooned so powerfully. They said, it's so bizarre to be genuinely loved, but not genuinely seen.
Gosh, yeah.
And this reflects that parents might be neglectful because of their own lack of emotional skills or maybe their own unresolved trauma. It's often not out of malice or a lack of love. They might be doing the absolute best they knew how.
But it still wasn't enough.
It just wasn't enough for that child's emotional development to really thrive.
Okay, so this leads us to the impact. The profound impact of this subtle neglect, connecting those personal stories, like that feeling of raggedy, underfed patternedness inside.
Yeah, that quote is something.
Even if you lived in a nice house, were well-behaved, that inner emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
So what does this actually mean for someone growing up with CEN, especially as they become an adult?
Well, the Psychology Today article outlines four major life struggles. These are really common outcomes of childhood emotional neglect. And they aren't just minor quirks. They're like fundamental gaps in your emotional foundation as an adult, often unrecognized until you start looking.
Okay, what are they?
First, there's a lack of self-knowledge. Parents are supposed to be like mirrors, right? Reflecting back who we are, our preferences, gifts, weaknesses, passions.
Mm-hmm.
When your emotions aren't validated, you miss out on really learning who you are deep down. The article gives this example of Kurt. He's on a third date and he just completely blanks when asked what he's good at.
Wow.
Because his emotionally absent parents just didn't see him deeply enough to reflect that back to him. He didn't have that data.
It's like having a map, but no, you are here, Sticker.
Mm.
How do you navigate if you don't even know your own starting point?
That's a great way to put it. A very apt analogy. The second struggle is low self-confidence. This shows up as trouble trusting yourself, constantly second-guessing your abilities.
Mm-hmm.
There's an example of Abigail in the source. She looks totally knowledgeable and put together at work, but before a big presentation, she feels like a total fraud.
Imposter syndrome.
Big time. Doubting her skills, despite actually being competent, it's all internal.
So it's not just needing external validation, but lacking that internal trust in yourself.
That's exactly it. And tied to that, the third struggle, low self-worth. This is a really deep-seated feeling that you're just not deserving of good things.
Oof.
Yeah. Whether it's fun experiences, good friends, success. The example is Jesse, who often canceled social plans because he had this anxious feeling that he didn't really deserve to have fun or have good friends.
That's heartbreaking.
It really is. And finally, the fourth one is low self-esteem. This is more of a pervasive feeling of being less than or not good enough, often fueled by relentless negative self-talk.
That inner critic.
Exactly. Gretchen, in a Mommy and Me class example, felt inferior to the other moms, even though she had ideas to share. She just held herself back because of that general feeling of being less than.
Wow. These aren't minor things at all. They're fundamental challenges to how you see yourself, how you move through the world, what you think you're capable of or even deserve.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deep impact.
It really is. And, you know, other sources add even more detail to this picture, more specific habits and struggles.
Like what?
Like constantly feeling like you're not enough, always striving for perfection, needing approval because maybe your achievements were just overlooked or minimized when you were young. One Reddit user mentioned that.
Right. Accomplishments weren't really seen or celebrated.
Yeah. So they developed this constant need for external validation.
That striving for perfection, it sounds exhausting. Like
yeah.
Trying to fill a bucket that has holes in it. The effort is huge, but the satisfaction just doesn't last.
That's a perfect image for it. Then there's also a common struggle with self-care, not just, you know, bubble baths, but neglecting your own emotional needs, dismissing them because you were never taught they were important.
Because your feelings weren't prioritized.
Exactly. Someone else mentioned they literally didn't know how to take care of themselves emotionally because their feelings were never treated as significant.
Mm-hmm.
Many people also become overly independent. They find it incredibly hard to ask for help or let others get close. Self-reliance was basically learned out of necessity, not chosen.
Right.
And while independence is good, this extreme version can be really, really isolating.
So that hyper-independence, it's like a coping mechanism, a shield maybe, rather than a healthy choice from genuine self-sufficiency.
Spot on. A perfect way to put it. Another really common impact is a deep-seated fear of rejection or abandonment.
Okay.
This can make you hyper-vigilant in relationships, constantly scanning for signs someone might pull away. One user shared this raw experience of just always being on edge, terrified people would just leave.
That sounds incredibly stressful.
Totally. You might also have difficulty identifying your own feelings. There's actually a term for it, alexithymia. Emotions just feel confusing or overwhelming because you basically learn to ignore them.
Like you don't have the words for them.
Exactly. Or the internal awareness. One Reddit post talked about how they literally didn't know their own opinions, likes or dislikes, or ability to make decisions because they were always subtly coached to just agree with their parents.
Wow.
And a really telling sign is the tendency to downplay your own feelings. Telling yourself they don't matter or you're overreacting. You've learned to minimize your internal world because it wasn't seen as important by the people who mattered most.
Okay, so if CEN impacts our inner world this deeply,
mm-hmm.
How does that actually play out in our adult relationships, especially romantic ones? This feels like a huge area where these hidden patterns would just have to emerge.
Oh, absolutely. The Psych Central source talks about this. It says CEN can make it profoundly difficult to trust others, to get truly close.
Makes sense.
It can lead to a lot of uncertainty, maybe a reluctance to step outside your comfort zone in romantic partnerships. And think about it. If you never learned to identify or express your own emotions as a kid,
how could you do it as an adult?
Right. Or even empathize properly with your partner's emotions, vulnerability, intimacy. Those things might feel incredibly threatening or just awkward.
It really does make perfect sense. If you weren't taught to recognize and name emotions in yourself, how could you possibly recognize them well in others, let alone respond in a meaningful, authentic way? It's like being asked to speak a language you only half learned.
That's a great analogy. And the IJP research paper connects this directly to attachment styles.
Oh, okay. Attachment theory.
Yeah, which is a fascinating field. It suggests that childhood neglect is strongly linked to insecure attachment styles, specifically anxious or avoidant attachment.
So those early emotional gaps really shape how we connect or maybe struggle to connect with others on a fundamental level, right down to how we seek connection or what feels normal.
That's pretty much it.
Right.
For instance, people with anxious attachment, they might really prefer love languages like words of affirmation and quality time.
Mm-hmm.
And these aren't just preferences. Often they're a way to seek the security and validation they missed out on. They need that constant reassurance that they're seen, that they're loved. It's like a hunger for what was absent.
Always checking if the connection is still there.
Mm.
And what about avoidant attachment? How does CEN show up there?
Well, those with avoidant attachment might lean towards physical touch and quality time too, but often for a different underlying reason. These ways of expressing closeness can let them keep a sense of control and independence, even during intimacy.
Ah, so they can be close, but not too vulnerable emotionally.
Exactly. It can be a way to kind of recreate a familiar dynamic where deep emotional vulnerability isn't really on the table, even if it's not truly fulfilling or healthy. One person on Reddit mentioned picking a distant partner specifically because that behavior felt normal to me.
Wow. So the patterns we experienced as kids, even the subtle ones where things were just missing, can unconsciously steer our choices.
Mm.
Who we partner with, how we act in relationships. It's like we're drawn to what feels familiar, even if it's not what we consciously want or actually need.
That's precisely what the Vegout source highlights, too. It notes that many people unconsciously recreate that push-pull dynamic of distant parenting in their adult relationships. They might even mistake intensity or drama for real intimacy.
Okay.
And this can show up as specific habits, like you might become the therapist friend, but never the patient.
Mm-hmm. I know people like that.
Right. You listen eagerly to everyone else's problems for hours, feel needed, but then you clam up completely when someone asks about your struggles. It makes you feel useful, but kind of invisible to yourself.
Yeah.
Or you might find yourself overachieving as proof of worth, constantly chasing external validation through accomplishments, promotions, marathons, whatever, because that's where you learned your value might lie. Your achievements become your main way of communicating worth.
Good.
There's also that tendency to tiptoe around conflict, avoiding vulnerable conversations because disagreement felt terrifying or like rejection was imminent as a child. You aim for peace at any price.
Even if the price is your own needs.
Exactly. And this one's really telling. You might shrink under praise or affection, literally swatting away compliments because genuine warmth felt unpredictable, maybe even suspicious in your childhood. Accepting a simple thank you or a kind word feels incredibly awkward.
Wow, that's specific.
Isn't it? And finally, treating self-care as an afterthought, prioritizing deadlines or other people's needs way above basic self-maintenance because your own emotional needs were just sidelined so early on. It really does shape the whole fabric of your daily life.
This all sounds incredibly challenging. And I imagine for many listening, it might be deeply resonant, maybe explaining things they couldn't quite put their finger on. It paints a picture of missing these foundational emotional pieces. But the good news, and this is important at our sources, really emphasize that healing is possible.
Yes, definitely.
So for someone recognizing these patterns in themselves, what are the first steps? Where do you even begin to build those emotional muscles that maybe never got exercised?
Healing really, really starts with recognition and acceptance. You know, like psychiatrist Dan Siegel famously says, name it to tame it.
Mm-hmm.
Once you identify what you're actually dealing with, whether it's the low self-confidence, the low self-worth, the low self-esteem, or that fundamental lack of self-knowledge, you gain some power to start managing it. The Lighthouse Counseling article and so many personal stories, they all emphasize this awareness as the absolute crucial first step. It's about acknowledging that empty space, that raggedy, underfed tatteredness inside, like that user said.
Instead of ignoring it.
Right. Instead of trying to ignore it or push it away, acknowledging it is key.
Okay. So recognition is step one, naming it. What are some practical strategies then? Things someone can actually start doing to address this, to begin filling in those missing pieces?
Well, a lot of the strategies focus on reconnecting with and validating your own emotions, the very things that were walled off or ignored back then.
Okay.
So first, accept that your emotions are blocked, but they're still present. Your childhood brain did a good job protecting you by walling them off, but they didn't just vanish. They're like a river that got diverted underground.
Still flowing somewhere.
Exactly. Mm. Accepting they exist is the first step to learning how to actually listen to them again.
Okay.
Then actively pay attention to your feelings. The source calls this the single most powerful thing you can do to cope with CEN. It's basically doing the opposite of what you learned.
Right.
It's about honoring your feelings, trying to reach for the richness, color, and connection that's on the other side of that emotional wall. This could be super simple, like just checking in with yourself a few times a day. Hey, what am I feeling right now? What's the sensation in my chest?
It sounds like rebuilding a language you never fully learned, starting with the basic vocabulary of your own inner world.
That's a perfect way to describe it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Another step is to practice sitting with negative feelings. This builds tolerance. It puts you back in control.
Instead of running from them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's an early building block for developing better emotion skills. Instead of pushing discomfort away or distracting yourself instantly, you learn to just observe it, understanding that it won't actually overwhelm you, that feelings pass.
Okay.
Also, keep an ongoing list of your likes and dislikes. This sounds small, but it's profoundly important. It builds self-knowledge.
Defining yourself.
Yes. What foods do you genuinely enjoy? What music? What hobbies actually bring you joy, not just fill time? This helps you define you, and then you can start making choices that actually make you happier.
That makes sense.
And crucially, develop and practice self-compassion. If you grew up with CEN, you're probably way kinder to others than you are to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Very likely.
So try to treat yourself with the same kindness and understanding you'd show a dear friend. Accept that you'll make mistakes, that healing isn't linear, and try not to be harsher on yourself than you would be on someone you really care about.
That's huge. We often internalize that harshness or absence we experience, right?
Mm-hmm.
Turning it inward. This sounds like actively reparenting ourselves with kindness.
It absolutely is. That's a great term for it. Another important one is to become aware of anger. Anger, if it's blocked, can fester and consume you. Just becoming aware of it can start to soothe and empower you almost immediately.
And its counterpart.
Learning to be assertive. Maybe reading a book on assertiveness. It helps you express your feelings and needs clearly to others without either suppressing them or having unhealthy outbursts.
Okay.
Next, maybe share your CEN story. Telling someone you trust, a close friend, your partner, maybe a supportive family member, can help you own your experience and feel less burdened, less alone. The Reddit threads are just full of people finding immense relief simply by sharing and feeling seen, sometimes for the first time.
Connection helps.
Massively. And finally, look for CEN effects in your primary relationships. How has it maybe played out in your marriage or affected how you parent your own children? Recognizing how CEN has influenced these key relationships opens the door to healing those relationships too, and maybe breaking cycles for the next generation.
Right, preventing it from continuing. And beyond these self-guided steps, what about professional help? Because for many, this stuff runs deep. It might feel way too overwhelming to tackle completely alone.
Oh, it's absolutely critical for many people. While, you know, books and self-help strategies offer valuable support, they really aren't a substitute for professional guidance when things feel stuck or overwhelming.
Mm-hmm.
So many Reddit users shared that therapy was transformative, especially things like trauma-informed therapy, EMDR.
Eye movement desensitization and reprocessing.
That's the one. And also somatic therapy, which is body-based therapy. These were really helpful for people. Well, therapists can provide that safe, consistent space to help you grieve the childhood you didn't get. And they can help provide the emotional roadmap that was missing. One user shared how EMDR helped them finally release all this repressed anger and fear. Another said somatic therapy helped them connect to their body and their inner self for the very first time.
Wow.
It's often about finding that reliable external regulator that the therapist that was missing originally to help you build your own stronger internal one.
So healing is really about giving yourself what you didn't receive, Reclaiming your own internal world, building those emotional muscles that didn't get exercised back then, one step, one insight at a time. This deep dive into childhood emotional neglect, it's really shown how much of our adult experience, our struggles, our patterns can be shaped by these invisible absences from way back.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about blame, though, is it? It's about understanding and then using that understanding to build something new. And what's so fascinating, I think, is that awareness really is like half the solution. It just shines a light on the path forward.
Indeed. Yeah. By tuning into your emotions, paying attention to yourself, really understanding these patterns, you start laying the groundwork for a more confident, worthy, and self-aware you.
The you you were meant to be.
Exactly. The you you were always meant to be. It's like a journey of self-authorship, you know? Writing new chapters with compassion, with your own voice finally at the center, filling in those empty spaces.
And that's definitely something worth exploring further. I mean, think about it. If we can get better at understanding how these subtle emotional dynamics impact us, maybe we can empower ourselves and future generations to build even deeper, more emotionally connected relationships. Really break those cycles for good. Imagine a world where everyone felt truly deeply seen.
That's a powerful thought. Thank you for joining us on this really important deep dive.
Yeah, thank you for listening. We really hope you found this helpful. If you did, maybe share this deep dive with someone else who might benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Leave us a comment. Let us know your thoughts. And definitely come back for our next exploration.
Goodbye, everyone. Take care.